Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 56. Buen Vivir, Practical Philosophy of the Andean Tradition and Beyond. States Empire and much of Eurozone, we hear about austerity measures, cutbacks for the social programs and the people, while big corporations in the military industrial complex marches on. Meanwhile, in Latin America, connecting the dots of the ending of a 500-year cycle of colonialism, destructive extraction, predatory capitalism, shock doctrine, divide and conquer. The beginning of the age of the Pacha, as Evo Morales said at the 2012 December 21st turning of the Mayan calendar. It is the end of hatred and the beginning of love, the end of lies and beginning of truth. It is the end of sadness and the beginning of happiness. It is the end of division and the beginning of unity, and this is a theme to be developed. That is why we invite all of you, those of you who bet on mankind, we invite those who want to share their experiences for the benefit of mankind. Flavor of the program as we explore Buen Vivir. This is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening. Outside, so in case you hear bird calls, dogs, cicadas, you say cicada, I say cicada, other kind of noises, you'll know what's what. Now, this is a topic that I almost didn't feel ready to talk about, but the urgency of it has motivated me, this kind of social philosophy from Latin America called Buen Vivir. It's something that I've read about in the news for several years, and just recently I've come across two documents, and read up on it. So the urge to share some quotes and bits from those documents, as well as some background information. For starters, there's probably hundreds of quotes, but one little quote from a recent news article at Common Dreams. Yum Brands, that's a real corporation, Y-U-M exclamation point Brands. Yum Brands, for example, paid its CEO David Novak $55 million last year and picked up $1.4 billion in net income. It can more than afford to give raises to its workers at Taco Bell and Kentucky Fried Chicken, many of whom make $7.25 an hour. So the reason I'm highlighting this quote is to show the disparity in the capitalistic culture, the extremes, sort of the 1%, 99% idea that was put forward in with the Occupy movement, and that is kind of juxtaposed with this, what we're going to, you know, learn about with the Buen Vivir. Now, calling it a practical philosophy, because it's not just, I wanted to distinguish between just some kind of airy-fairy love of wisdom that sometimes philosophy gets pegged on and put it in, it's practical, and it has to do with a holistic everyday life, as well as the cosmos, from the earth to the sky and so forth. And from what I've just read, it comes out of the Andean area of Latin America. So they also have another phrase, sumac cause, if I'm not sure how to pronounce it, sumakkausay. I'll put up links to these. They'll be on the web page, so you can do further research and read up on your own if you so desire. Now, Ecuador in 2008 was the first country to legally acknowledge the rights of Mother Earth, and that is the gist of the documents and the philosophy of Buen Vivir, is this respect for and implementation in a legal way, which is tricky, but we'll get to that more, of respect and rights and responsibility for living in balance with Mother Earth. Some of the Latin American countries call Pachamama. Now, there's several different ways I've noticed to kind of approach the Buen Vivir topic, and that's, there's the political, how it integrates with the politics of various countries. That'll become a little more apparent later on. There's the cultural, which again pertains to each of these countries, and however you might interpret it culturally and personally, which is more of how you might interpret it. So just the concept of living well versus sort of living more, wanting more and never being satisfied, which is much of the American dream, Euro individualized way of doing it. So it's different ways to apply what living well means. You know, sometimes a good meal part of living well, sharing with others. Again, more of that will be explored. For starters, a little background information, because before talking about the Latin American culture, it's helpful to understand some background of the consciousness. And to give a flavor, this is from a fascinating book published by City Lights, which is the bookstore press started run by Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And this is called New World of Indigenous Resistance, Noam Chomsky and Voices from North, South, and Central America. And in the introduction by Lois Meyer, she writes, this book includes three interviews with Noam Chomsky about indigenous resistance to globalization and cultural homogenization in the American hemispheres, but it offers even more than that. Gathered here for the first time in virtual conversation with the preeminent linguist and critical analyst of American foreign policy are voices from the indigenous Americas, South, Central, and North, who speak to, with, and at times against Chomsky's views. And the book has various essays, talks. After the interviews with Chomsky, there are the voices from Mexico, Guatemala, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Argentina, Uruguay, USA, and then it winds up with Chomsky and some final commentaries. Now, the biggest thing wants to be conveyed here is just the sort of the difference between the awareness, culture, upbringing, in America, we're kind of used to the individual, the American dream, the rugged frontiers person, and in the indigenous cultures in Latin America, indigenous cultures and society, there's much more of a built-in sense of community. So I think that flavors things. And here's a bit from the introduction. Three recurring topics only highlighted here resonate deeply with me as a U.S. bilingual educator and applied linguist. This is Lois Meyer writing. One, indigenous comunalidad reaches far beyond Western ideas of cooperation, collectivization, or social concern for the other, addressing the philosophical, moral, even spiritual question, what or who is the very ground of existence, both human and cosmic. Taken seriously, the question tears down the barriers we construct between academic disciplines, ecosystems, galaxies, mind and body, sacred and profane, and conceptions of time and space. As Jaime Martinez Luna writes in his commentary in this volume, communalidad is a way of understanding life as being permeated with spirituality, symbolism, and a greater integration with nature. It is one way of understanding that man is not the center, but simply a part of this great natural world. It is here that we can distinguish the enormous difference between Western and indigenous thought. Who is at the center? Only one or all? The individual or everyone? So much of their decision-making process is based on consensus. You know, the West, there's phrases entrenched individualism and industrial standardization. So this is what... is what the different kind of view is. And some more on these words. This is a section called the translation of untranslatable words, which is that sometimes our concepts from other cultures are hard to even, or impossible to even put into English. We acknowledge their status as untranslatable words by leaving them in Spanish marked by italics throughout our book. The term comunalidad has already been employed several times in this chapter, defined in shorthand as the principle and practices of communal life and the source of indigenous identity and resistance. The term itself comes from the Oaxacan indigenous context and is described in considerable detail in this volume. Several commentators from Central and South America appear to misinterpret comunalidad as referring to the more limited meaning of community, comunidad. At least two other terms, which seem at least superficially to convey the deeper meaning of comunalidad, have surfaced in these commentaries. Minga, M-I-N-G-A, from Ecuador, and A-Y-L-L-U, Ailu, from the Aymaras in Bolivia. So again, there's this question of what the words, what it actually means. We are even less willing to risk the English translation of communitarianism or any of its derivatives, each of which is burdened with socio-political history and meanings in U.S. and other Western contexts. For all these reasons, we have left the term comunalidad and other terms italicized, untranslated, allowing each author to provide the meaning appropriate to their text and context. So again, this highlights this thing about, you know, not just book knowledge and words, but hearing from different perspectives what a word or a concept is about. Different, you know, could be different countries, different people, and you get a fuller flavor rather than just the dictionary, this equals this. The term concept interculturalidad, which also appears frequently across the commentaries, we have deemed equally untranslatable, but for somewhat different reasons. To our knowledge, a term such as interculturalism or interculturality has no meaning in English. Indeed, we would be forced to invent both the term and its meaning, which provides no solution in the translation task. The familiar English term multiculturalism is entirely inadequate as a translation for interculturalidad. Multiculturalism has its cognate in Spanish, multiculturalidad, but the contextual meanings in this term in Latin America imply a status quo, non-critical appreciation of other cultures' approach to diversity. In contrast, the term interculturalidad has evolved precisely to recognize and challenge the disparities of power and status between cultural groups in society. That goes on a bit, and a third term, cosmovision, is perhaps equally untranslatable. However, here we have taken another tack. We rejected worldview, the translation provided in several Spanish-English dictionaries, in favor of creating our own literal anglicized translation, cosmovision, implying a philosophical or spiritual perspective that attempts to account for or include a way of understanding the entire cosmos and humanity's place in it. you feel this suggests the possibility of envisioning multiple worlds, not just one, and approximates both the expansiveness and the unity conveyed by cosmovision in indigenous thought. And to give perhaps a flavor of this is an essay called Beyond Education by Gustavo Esteva of Mexico. And in it, he talks about various planes of existence. And he leads into that with the following. He's talking about this plurinationalism and respect for different traditions. In U.S. society, one can almost hear the clamor to adopt as a unifying principle the idea of the salad bowl, referring to a form of society that recognizes and celebrates difference. This is the ideal suggested by the Zapatistas, that instead of the Western project of constructing one world unified under the domination of the West, we would be able to construct one world in which many worlds fit, a world in which difference is not only recognized but also celebrated. Tolerance is not enough. To tolerate is to insult, Goethe said. To tolerate is to say, you are not as you should be, you do not have the appropriate skin color or God, but I am so generous that I am going to allow your presence, I tolerate you. Instead of tolerance, we need hospitality. We need to open our heads, hearts, and arms to the radical otherness of the other, celebrating it with hospitality. That's a wonderful phrase, the radical otherness of the other. Culture, says Raymond Panikkar, is the encompassing myth of a society in a given time and space. And also myth, in this context, is the horizon of intelligibility within which all of our perceptions of reality make sense. The myth offers the frame within which the cosmovision is inscribed. It is that which permits and conditions any interpretation of reality. It is not seeing something or believing something, but believing that one sees. It is that which gives meaning to meaning without being contained with it. Like light, it permits us to see, but we cannot see it. It is necessary to distinguish among the distinct planes of culture. The morphological plane, entirely visible, like the foliage of a tree, made up of the traits that constitute the external manifestations of cultures, language, dress, food, etc. Structural plane, partly visible and partly invisible, like the trunk of a tree composed of the forms for organizing behaviors according to shared norms, medical or religious practices, governmental requirements, legal and social norms, etc. A mythic plane, entirely invisible, like the roots of a tree whose substance is the cosmovision, the notion of being, the perception of time, etc. Our cultures are clearly affected in the morphological and structural planes. So that gives a little bit of a background and in a sense of what this framework of the Buen Vivir is, but it's not just mythological. And again, this is where the English comes into tricks and start trying to convey some of these indigenous principles, that it's not just mythical, but you know, the mythical and the physical. There's this holistic unity view that stops distinguishing between, well, this is mythic and this is a solid chair, and starts to blend, and that's where the verbiage becomes quite tricky. So the first bits are from a document called Living Well in Harmony and Balance with Mother Earth. And you know, if you remember nothing else of the details, even that title is sort of like a Zen koan. You can work with that. Living well in harmony and balance with Mother Earth. And the gist of what this is presenting is a paradigm shift of consciousness and into practice. Has to do with the markets, political, social, etc. So it is not only the philosophical, mythological shift, but applying it to the daily lives, to our structures, to our food systems, etc. And quote from the document, the economy of the Mother Earth and the well-being in balance and harmony with Mother Earth. This is the only way to build a world that will be based genuinely on different visions and approaches and will be inclusive of all countries and peoples. So they're highlighting from a monocentric to a plurinational view, as the Lakota and other indigenous peoples of North America, Turtle Island, refer to all our relations, sense of plurinational. privatization and commodification versus more of the communalidad and sharing view. And another important part of the document is that it highlights getting past this sort of FAU ex-FO green system that we're starting to hear about, you know, buying green and doing this green, and it has maybe a good idea, but if it gets taken over by consumerism, it's losing the point. So they kind of put it in a green slash capitalistic category, getting past that and instead embracing a real connection with Mother Earth. So as my little example is, you know, it's wonderful that I recycle bottles, but you know, perhaps there's a way to use less bottles. You know, rather than patting myself on the back for being green for recycling, think of the overall picture and the connection with Mother Earth, which is, oh, maybe I can actually use less bottles. Other bits from the document: recognition of the rights of Mother Earth as a key part of the dialogue, and community goods, seeing getting past the privatization, which is somewhat rampant and starting to affect water. Even already, some of our bottled waters are from a community sense. I mean, where does a company and corporation get the rights to take water out of the ground and sell it back to us? So these are important topics. And another quote that I like from the document: wealth is a gift from Mother Earth. Wealth is a gift from Mother Earth. And a longer paragraph here: the living well is an ancient approach stemming from the visions of indigenous peoples worldwide that allows for the creation of solid conditions for the long-term survival of Mother Earth without social, material, and spiritual poverty. This approach must not be exclusive to indigenous peoples of the world, and therefore can become a universal paradigm, transforming the political decisions and actions of human beings. The living well paradigm challenges the anthropocentric approach to civilization based only on the power of markets and financial resources, in which money is what gives life to everything and the development is a means without end. Living well is an inclusive approach that implies creating a new global relationship with nature and among human beings, which is based on the following aspects. 1. The expansion of the rights to Mother Earth, because the main source of life is Mother Earth. 2. Setting ethical values and responsibilities of peoples with Mother Earth, monetary and non-monetary. 3. The fulfillment of obligations of states, communities, and individuals with Mother Earth. And 4. The protection of the environmental functions of Mother Earth as community goods. That's the Blue Jay chiming in this morning. Now, there's a lot more to that first document. That's what jumped out. Second document is a bit longer and more in depth, and less of just the philosophy part, but more showing how it will be integrated onto the world scene. And this is called Wayne Vivier, A Brief Introduction, and it's by Thomas Fathauer, Fathauer, and it's on the website Heinrich Boll Stiftung, the Green Political Foundation. From what I saw briefly, Heinrich Boll is a writer, German writer, who is into this stuff. So jump in with a bunch of quotes from this document. Nature with the status of legal entity. So this part of the document highlights the trickiness of taking these kind of principles and philosophies and ways of life that, coming from indigenous cultures, are not necessarily in our traditional legal sense. So it's trying to integrate these principles into the kind of global scene, which is, you know, currently much dominated by the corporate state. So it's sort of some of how to, you know, play the game without playing the game. It's this merging of Euro-Western and indigenous that is going on. And two of the countries that are most prominent with the Buen Vivir are Bolivia and Ecuador. As mentioned, Ecuador was the first country to actually have the rights of Mother Earth in the Constitution, and I think Bolivia has done the same or is close to doing that. Another blending going on and mentioned in the document is the Andean traditions and Western alternative discourses. By Western alternative discourses, it's essentially meant that people from the West that are looking into these alternatives of, you know, green energy or natural energy, different sources, and so the West it's not all black and white. Another phrase put forth is neo-extractivism, since much of the extracting going on, the mining, the toxic legacy of hundreds of years of that has been a negative and kind of destructive extractivism in a sense of rape. So what's being looked at is how to get things out of or from the Mother Earth in a way that is respectful of the Earth. Bolivia, for example, is sitting on probably billions of dollars worth of lithium, which is useful in various mobile phones and other gadgets. So it's kind of the issue there of how do they jostling for position to be on the world stage in an economical way, yet also respectful of the indigenous peoples and the culture and not leaving a toxic legacy. So it's quite interesting, quite tricky, and really this Buen Vivir is really putting forth this kind of whole new paradigm. It's not really new, but from what we're used to nowadays, it's this whole new paradigm of how to coexist. Bolivia and Ecuador have redefined themselves in the constitutional process as plurinational, rather than the word socialism, which is tricky. It's has a sort of homogenous stereotype. But in Venezuela, that Chavez spoke of a new kind of socialism. This is again coming from the indigenous Andean tradition and the historical and social context of the Buen Vivir concept. It's the living well is not living beyond one's means or not trying to accrue more and more and more. That's sort of the American dream of more and more. It was Tecumseh who said that white man never contented, always encroaching, but that cycle is ending now. It's this 500 year cycle of colonization and the tide is turning. Some more quote bits. The constitutions of both countries, Ecuador and Bolivia, strengthen communitarian structures and participatory models of democracy. Now, reflecting on this, I was comparing the U.S. Constitution, which has pretty much been shredded with recent events, and the phrase life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Find that word pursuit kind of tricky. It's almost like it does not acknowledge that it exists. It sort of acknowledges you're allowed to go after it, which in a personal way, yeah, each person has to make themselves happy, but in this social, political way, it kind of opens the door for the predatory capitalism and every man for himself. You have your life, your liberty, and your, go ahead, pursue your happiness, see where you get. And you can make it big. You can be like a Yum Brands guy, but at the neglect of all the other people. So that's where the system is faulty. Again, the Buen Vivir not having to do with having more, but which is a linear progress and growth, which is that sort of constant progress, boom time mentality, which if you look at nature, just does not work. It is not built into the structure of nature, which again, the indigenous peoples and this Buen Vivir highlights the connection with Mother Earth, which is that we attune to the cycles of Mother Earth and have that essence show us how to behave, not try to shape Mother Earth so much as work with and see where she is showing us. Reminded of wonderful movie Being There with Peter Sellers and Chauncey Gardner, who in a humorous way says these very simple things like there will be growth in the spring and you know, in summer things will flourish, and then in the autumn they will fade, and it's sort of childlike, simplistic, but yet it has this wisdom of living and going along with the cycles, not trying to dominate them. More quotes from the Bulling document. According to the philosophy of Wayne Vivier, it is necessary to question traditional development concepts. From this perspective, the celebrated sustainable development should be accepted as an interim goal on the way toward a new paradigm that encompasses the dimensions of equality, freedom, and equal rights, as well as sustainability. So again, in the sort of modern vernacular, we get these phrases like green and sustainable, and they become almost cliche overnight. And so here we're reminded that the sustainability, it's not, you know, again, it's not just, hey, I'm recycling, but it has to do with equality, freedom, equal rights. There's a whole wider picture. More quotes. Boyne Vivier breaks with conventional concepts in several ways, in that it relies on indigenous traditions and visions of the cosmos. It breaks with traditional concepts of development. It focuses on the relationship to nature beyond traditional leftist perspectives. And that's an important thing, because a lot of the sort of semi-mainstream things that come out of the leftist view, and it's the perspective being put forth is more is a holist or centrist. Strengthening social rights while encouraging growth is the traditional leftist priority in Latin America. Brazil and Venezuela share this path, even if the form is different completely. Pachamama and the rights of nature play a special role in the political rhetoric developed before and after the constitutional process in Bolivia. The Law on the Protection of the Earth was adopted in 2010. The law refers to the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Mother Earth, which was passed during the Alternative Climate Summit in Cochabamba, Bolivia. Alvaro Garcia Linera, Bolivia's vice president and key theorist of the ruling party, sees the new law as a virtually epical event. For the first time in the world, the relationship between man and nature is being put on a foundation of originality, mutuality, and dialogue. So this is what this global, quote, political significance is that these rights are being put forth. This progression of documents from the Declaration of Right, Universal Declaration of the Rights of Mother Earth, and now this Boyne Vivier into the Constitution. So there's this whole sense of evolution of what is happening. Now, another tricky part, which this document was very helpful to show, was the lines between some of the indigenous people, say in Bolivia, and, you know, compared with the government. Evo Morales is the first indigenous president, and yet not everything that's been done has been favored by the indigenous people. So it's another tricky layer. Document says industrialization and commercialization of natural resources, a priority of the state, is an issue with some indigenous peoples. And you can look up, there's an organization, acronym CONAMAQ. Now, actually, some of their protests actually did, I think, help to redirect some of Morales and the government's direction. So it's sort of like, you know, the wheels within wheels, indigenous with indigenous, and this is happening because it's connected with these political structures. And a few more quotes here. We must return to being rather than colonization. Colonization being this kind of, you know, going out and colonizing and progressing and all that stuff. But the Boyne Vivier philosophy is focusing on being and having our actions come from the being. And I don't know how to pronounce this, CH'IXI, like many other concepts, subscribes to the Aymar idea that something simultaneously is and is not, and thus incorporates a third state. And this is a wonderful section. I found this to be very in tune with the Eastern philosophies and consciousness. very Zen of, you know, it is and it is not. Hear this with the Tibetan text too, and the Aymara is the I think Incan tradition, and now Bolivia. The idea that something simultaneously is and is not, and thus incorporates a third state. So this gets along the lines of, oh, that sort of the thing about, you know, rather than just good and bad, the corporate is bad, it's like, well, it is part of reality, so let's see how it works, and maybe there's something useful. The example I like to give is how, you know, as much as McDonald's gets ridiculed, they have an efficient structure, and other fast food places, they have an efficient structure for feeding large amounts of people. So rather than just write it off as all bad, see that the structure that is there has a positive potential. So however that can be applied with all this, that's my interpretation. One example of this is not, and holding that and creating a third state. More quotes. This ability to accept differences is fundamental, and he draws a parallel to quantum mechanics. Now that ties in with, again, I'll mention the First Voices Indigenous Radio with Teokasin Ghosthorse, because he has a wonderful show talking about the language of spirituality. It's August 1st show, and how Native peoples are, they literally speak the language of, you know, quantum physics. So it helps to bust these stereotypes that we have of the indigenous peoples as, you know, just knowing how to live with the land and feed themselves kind of thing, and shows that they have a deep, deep understanding and expression of what science puts forth. Pacha is a key concept in Andean culture. Is it an ambiguous term that refers to the totality of being? It not only encompasses space and time, but also a form of life that overcomes the nature of space and time. Pacha is not only space and time, it is the ability to actively take part in the universe, to immerse oneself in it, to be in it. So this term Pachamama, which is loosely translated as a Mother Earth, again, looking deeper into the words, and the language shows that the concept is way beyond as helpful as it is to think of and connect with Mother Earth. That it is beyond that. It's a sort of space-time continuum stuff. Those campaigning for the rights of nature are thus aware of an inescapable anthropocentric paradox. The rights of nature are being championed and represented by humans. Nevertheless, recognizing the rights of nature would be a significant and powerful change of perspective. The starting point would no longer be the regulation of environmental protection, and thus the exploitation of nature by man, but a genuine right of existence for nature. So rather than just, you know, how do we respectfully dig up some area, it's like maybe the area does not want to be dug up, or would be detrimental to be dug up. The way that I think it was a Hopi elder talking about your uranium in the ground is an attractor for lightning. So with the uraniums taken out of the ground, it can affect the lightning and the thunderstorms. So leaving me with the impression that, you know, sort of white man has no effing clue sometimes about how things are connected, and that is some of the importance about this whole Wayne Vivier and respect and coexistence with the Mother Earth. The section, here's another quote from the document. The section was amended to include the animals, which are thus granted a dedicated right within the context of state goals. Section 1 of the German Animal Welfare Act establishes animals' rights to protection due to their nature as fellow creatures. The idea of the protection of species also goes beyond the traditional concept of environmental protection in many respects. This reminded of some recent videos of the agri-businesses and videos of literally horrible stuff showing animals being kicked and thrown around, and the terrible treatment. And you know, if someone is doing that to an animal, how are they treating the fellow human beings? And in Ecuador, as well as Bolivia, with the an issue of some of the oil and mining laws that Correa was putting forth, Rafael Correa, the president of Ecuador, some of the indigenous peoples do not like that. And in a short video on a show called Latin Pulse, which is on Link TV, which is a satellite TV station. You can also watch some of it on linktv.org. There was, I put that link up too. There's having to do with Ecuador and the Chevron Texaco and other topics, but there was mention of artisanal mining. Now, this, from the little that I gained from watching that, it was kind of like, you know, the way someone might have to survive in a small way and use rocks or gemstones or something, that there's a certain level of mining that is part of coexisting with Mother Earth. So again, rather than this black and white, you know, no mining, it's looking deeper, no pun intended, into the topic. And that's a phrase, artisanal, that I only heard with say breads and foods, you know, artisanal bakeries. But here we have this phrase, artisanal mining, showing that there's another way of doing things. One more last big quote here from this document, the introduction to Boyne Revere. The exploitation of nature and mineral resources is central to the question of whether Boyne Revere will be able to gain political traction. It therefore seems an irony of fate that in Bolivia, of all places, hopes are revolving around a new commodities boom. Bolivia has the world's largest lithium deposits. Lithium is required for the manufacture of batteries for mobile phones and electric cars, and is therefore a strategic resource of the future. According to the Economist Intelligence Unit, a corporate consultancy, the exploitation of its lithium deposits could provide the country an income of around $120 billion a year. Faced with such prospects, leaving the lithium to Mother Earth is not easy. The lithium reserves are located in the vast Salar de Uyuni, Uyuni salt flat, and mining them would not adversely affect the country's indigenous peoples or biodiversity. I wonder how accurate that is. In February 2011, the Bolivian government negotiated with a high-level Japanese business delegation on a strategic partnership. Bolivia emphasized that it was not interested in the simple exploitation of commodities and a replay of the resource curse, but it wanted to develop its own lithium-based industry. Morales even proclaimed the vision of a Bolivian-made electric car. So there, in a way, is the essence of the global conundrum going on, is this whole question of commodities and mining and the global scene and how to overcome the colonial extractivism and how to, as Rodney King said, how do we all get along? Other countries in Latin America, Brazil is kind of a mixed bag of what's going on as far as breaking free of the capitalist sort of entrenched system. Other countries that are unifying or are aligning with much of what Bolivia, Ecuador, and Venezuela are doing, Paraguay, Nicaragua, Argentina, Uruguay, and much of it under the auspices of Simón Bolívar's vision of unifying Latin America. To wrap it up, a few short bits from a book which I just started reading, called Latin America's Turbulent Transitions, The Future of 21st Century Socialism. And in the introduction, this kind of sums up, again, what is going on in the global sense. This book examines two central and conflicting processes that are driving this transition. One is the demise of the United States as the hegemonic power in the hemisphere, and the other is the rise and renewal of socialism in Latin America. Now, the socialism word is tricky, so I'm going to read their interpretation of socialism. First, socialism is the development of human beings, meaning that the pursuit of profit needs to be replaced by a logic of humanism and solidarity aimed at satisfying human needs. Secondly, socialism respects nature and opposes consumerism. Our goal should not be to live better, but to live well, as the Andean indigenous cultures declare. Thirdly, borrowing from the radical economics professor Michael Leibowitz, Harnacker says socialism establishes a new dialectic of production, distribution, consumption based on A, social ownership of the means of production, B, social production organized by workers in order to C, satisfy communal needs. Fourthly, socialism is guided by a new concept of efficiency that both respects nature and seeks human development. Fifthly, there is need for the rational use of the available natural and human resources thanks to a decentralized participatory planning process that is the opposite of Soviet hyper-centralized bureaucratic planning. To fully achieve these objectives will be a long process taking decades and generations. The tangible advances toward 21st century socialism are limited. The three countries that have put 21st socialism on the agenda have had decidedly different results, as the following chapters reveal. And to connect what is going on in Latin America and this whole evolution, I wouldn't say it's like the Wayne Revere movement, but that's an essence of what is being put forth. But to connect this, sort of connect the dots, wrap it up with this connect the dots with things going on the world scene. At the same time, the shape of the world to come is unclear and undefined. New anti-systemic forces appeared on the scene in 2011 with the Arab Spring, the rebellion of the indignados in Europe, and the Occupy Wall Street movement in the United States. But these upsurges, rather than rallying around the call for authentic democracy, have not defined a clear vision of the future world they are struggling for. Latin America is part of this global upheaval. On the one hand, we see the demise of the old order with the decrease of U.S. influence in the Americas, particularly in the unraveling of the neoliberal model that was implanted more firmly in Latin America in the 1980s and 90s than in any other region of the global South. On the other hand, anti-systemic forces in the hemisphere began to challenge this order early on with the Zapatista rebellion in Mexico in 1994 and the rise of indigenous movements, especially in the Andean countries of Ecuador and Bolivia. Then, in late 1999, the struggle against neoliberalism took on an inter-American character with the Battle of Seattle that shut down the conclave of the World Trade Organization. Zapatistas, indigenous groups, and trade unionists from Latin America marched alongside Teamsters, Turtles, environmentalists, and farm organizations in the streets of Seattle. So, there you have kind of a basic but somewhat in-depth introduction into this, into the philosophy, social practical philosophy of Wayne Revere, and how that connects to the politics and the world scene, and in a way, all of the protest movements going on around the world. So, to find out more, check out those documents. They're really good reads. A bit of concentration, because it's this new topic to a lot of Western way of thinking. But even if you just simply apply the living in balance and harmony with Mother Earth, and look at what living well means to you, a good meal with friends and family, having something fun to do, sharing what you have in the garden, with your neighbors, just those little simple things are ways that in our own ways, we can apply this wonderful philosophy that is practical and earthy of Wayne Revere. So thank you for listening, and we're going to go out with a little song, some traditional Bolivian music. So have a good one, and que tenga buen día. Encuentros, which means we find or we meet together.